Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about...
What are you doing? Who you think you are?
I'm your co-host, damn it.
He's back, everybody. Yay, I'm back alive. And raring for action. On this week's episode, we'll be answering letters about an aftercare neglecting dom, friends taking sides after a breakup, shibari rope that's too slippery, and emotional intelligence.
I was trying to be you, but I can't, no one can replace you.
No one can be me. So, well, I missed you on last week's episode, but I really wanted to ask you some questions if you're willing to talk about why you were gone from last week's episode.
Yeah. Do you notice anything different?
Your hair?
Well, I did dye it recently. Oh. Added some pink in the purple, okay. But no, okay. That's not it.
No, what is it?
Nothing? Not noticeable?
I don't see anything.
I got a vasectomy.
I would have noticed that, but...
Yeah, it's kind of a hard one to picture off the bat. Yeah, so I will gladly answer questions about that.
Yeah.
It seems pertinent here.
So first off, tell us about your experience with it.
Yeah. You may be concerned because I think last episode there was a mention about having complications. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say, so don't let that fool you or leave a bad example. I will explain everything. All the answers will be revealed to you after those commercials. So I'm sorry. What was the question?
What was your experience?
Yes, thank you.
I know you were a rare case. So yeah, yeah. Tell us the ins and outs, start to finish.
So I've been wanting to get a vasectomy for a very long time, and since I have health insurance for the first time in like, I don't know, well over 10 years at this point, and IT is just pretty uncommon for people to have unless you work more of a corporate job. Mm-hmm. I just worked for smaller companies. So I was like, I take care of myself. I mean, for the most part, so
calculated risks.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes they lean to like, yes, that's a risk worth taking. Uh-huh. So I was like, okay, I'll find out if they cover this. So I initially reached out to them. They're like, no, we don't cover it. I was like, okay, whatever, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But then in calling a urologist and getting the pricing, it was like $1,000. I was like, oh, that's like actually a lot less than I had imagined. I'm imagining like thousands of dollars for the procedure.
Yeah.
And that was not the case. It was very cheap. It was relatively cheap, and I found out my insurance covered 60% of it.
Nice.
So I made two easy payments of $200.19 and 25 or something. Like, I don't know.
Nice.
There was an initial like appointment, like a consultation with the doctor, and she asked some questions, and she was like asking like, you know, well, what's your reasoning? You know, and it sounded like she's making sure that I was doing this from a well-informed place, which of course it was.
Right, of course. I expect nothing less from you.
And I was like, yeah, I've been wanting this for a while, and I definitely don't want children. And, I think that she was just filtering that and just explaining the process, recovery, what that looked like. Then we scheduled it out. So it's like a few months back. So I think the conversation started in January. Mm. So then came, you know, April when I had it scheduled, and it was like such a short procedure. You know, I was sitting there. It's like awkward because I'm sitting there on this table and they're like knocking the door. I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be unclothed. I'm like, this is kind of, I just want to be naked when someone just walks in. Yeah. I want to be like mindful.
Yeah.
And
take me to dinner first, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Ask me my name. Like, ask me what my favorite color is. Like, what kind of music I'm into.
So you didn't have to be under anesthesia, did you?
No, it was just a local anesthesia. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I laid on this table, kind of slightly reclined back. Uh-huh. And so there's like a, I don't know. We call it tarp, but it's not tarp. It's just like a cover.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, then they pull up and there's nothing there. Uh-huh. You know, nothing left to the imagination, as they say. so I have like the doctor and her assistant, and those two are you know, sort of explaining the process. She's like, okay, you might feel some really cold, and it sound, and maybe it was like a shot, their local anesthetic, mm-hmm. so really cold on my like genital area. And she said, oh, this might pinch a little bit. I'm not sure what that was. Maybe that was another, maybe the first one was cleaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this mm-hmm. was cold. So they weren't too bad. They were just like, you know, uncomfortable, but like super brief. And like being slapped across the face is way more like uncomfortable, you know?
Gotcha.
It's just like, okay. And then yeah. it's fine. And they also have this like little machine. And apparently, I'm going to butcher this, but if I'm not mistaken, I think they cut the vas deferens. Mm-hmm. And if that, I believe that's the tube that brings the sperm from the, you know, from mm-hmm. the testes mm-hmm. out, to your, I don't know the technical term for this, for to your penis, yeah. your penis. And then, then once they cut it, then they cauterize it. So they had a machine. So I hear something burning.
Oh.
And I'm like, this is kind of weird.
Wow.
And I just kept thinking, like, how weird a job you have just to do this.
Yeah. But you didn't feel a thing, huh?
Barely. It was like, so, you know, they're talking to me during the whole time. Yeah. Like, what kind of music are you like? Okay. Well, like some really obscure music, but I really like these cello artists. So we're just like chumming it up and talking. And it was, I think half an hour was tops, was the actual procedure part.
Wow. Okay.
And so it was like, and there wasn't any pain. It was like actually super easy. Mm. So after they were finishing, I said, okay, we're almost done. Like, oh, awesome. Cool. Like, and I decided like, I could have like looked over and seen what's going on, but I decided since it was being cut open yeah. and cauterized, I was like, I just don't know if I want to see this shit. Cause I would have like, that would have been like traumatized. So I just kind of like, was leaned back and looked up and just like talking, looking at them. And so I just decided to keep it, keep that hidden for myself.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, then after that, they're like, okay, for the next, for the next 48 hours, 72 hours, you want to make sure that you're just relaxing, like have someone help you with getting food. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be discoloration, there'll be bruising, maybe some discomfort, but you just like, you know, lie down and try to be more horizontal. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool. So I get home from the procedure. It's like the first hour after the procedure, the local anesthetic starts wearing off. Mm. And so that's when I was like, ooh, I feel like this weight's in my genital area. Like it's like pulling, but it's not like a pulling in a good way. It's ooh. Kind of like a weight and slight discomfort and pain. Mm-hmm. So I go to sit in the bathroom. Okay, story time. So I go to sit in the bathroom on the toilet. And right when I try to sit down, there's a sharp pain in my like upper groin area, kind of like where the hip and the leg meet. Mm-hmm. And I was just, and I was like getting cold sweats. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh shit.
I was like, oh. And I was just trying to like go to the bathroom. And then I go lay down on my bed afterwards. And it was really difficult getting up. And so ooh. Jordan's and my partner was like, are you okay? And she's like, cause she said I was like pale in the face. Mm. And then I said, yeah, you know, well, I was either going to poop or pass out. And luckily I didn't pass out. So. And so my recovery has been pretty like a tame. I'm just like laying down and for a bit. And then, but the where it gets interesting mm-hmm. and where it kind of like, where it's a little strange was like every time I go up in the morning and then the afternoon, I was just like, oh, like at this sitting, getting up and sitting down is really painful, like wow. right in the specific area. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I was reading online, I'm like this, and people don't really mention this.
Yeah.
So I was like, something kind of seems up. So I decided to go back after a week and,
so you know, what you were feeling was outside of like the normal range of like typical recovery feelings people yeah. would have after a vasectomy.
Yeah, that's okay. what it's not like most some people were just bounced back after a week. You yeah, know?
That's what I had heard.
Yeah, and I was just like, man, I'm really struggling to sit down. Like no one mentions like pain going to the bathroom and,
yeah.
and I'm like really confused about it. But I didn't have any abnormal swelling. I saw the discoloration. It looks like my penis was gonna fall off because whoa. Of the bruising.
Whoa.
Like, it was just like black. It was just like, I wasn't scared of that because I remember them talking about it. I'm like, okay, that's what it looks like. But man, it looks like it's going to fall off any minute now.
That's disconcerting.
So, yeah. There was a moment where, like, my partner was like looking me down the hallway and I'm like walking naked with like an ice pack. And then she's kind of like gave me this face. And I'm like, you're probably thinking that's going to go inside of me. I'm like, don't you worry. It's going to look better at some point.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, so I go back to the doctor and she points out, oh, do you see all this bruising? And I saw this bruising above like groin area and then inside of my right side, which is where all the pain is. So, like, and I didn't notice that before. And she's like, oh, you have a, this is a hematoma. And it's like, and I forget if I recall this correctly, but our hematoma is a, it's like bleeding outside of blood vessels or something like that. And so that explains the pain. Mm-hmm. And she said it was like nothing she could have done differently. Sometimes it happens, but it's uncommon when it comes to vasectomy. So I was like, oh, so I had this from the beginning. And I was asking about like, how do I, so I felt better knowing, okay, this is what it is and how to deal with it. And so I would just have to be elevating my hips above my heart, which is already an awkward position.
Yeah.
And icing and resting. So I did that pretty aggressively, you know, for the next week. And I noticed that my body was like, oh, now I can finally like get up and sit up without pain. Because even just like standing for a period of time, I could feel discomfort. So they did offer, and I still haven't picked up the prescription for like oxycodone or something. Ooh. But I just feel, I was like, you know, it's not like so bad I can't do anything. But I did get like ibuprofen, Tylenol, and that's helped with the inflammation and the pain. So that's, I was like, you know what, that's fine. I don't need it on the other to go as far as painkillers to be totally out of it. So.
Man, what an experience.
Yeah.
You got so unlucky to have like a rare complication from that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, it was strange, but also like, I mean, for me, it's worth it. Like if it's just like a month or so of discomfort and I don't have to have children or anything like that, then I'm okay with that.
You know? Okay, cool. Well, that's great. Like you can contextualize it as like, yeah, it was uncomfortable and painful for a time, but the long-term rewards are worth it, even though like this had gotten more complicated than it needed to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, okay. I also wanted to hear about your motivations for getting a vasectomy. Like, besides the obvious, I don't want to have kids, right? Yeah.
Well, why?
Like, what does it do for you to get a vasectomy?
It gave me... So it was a couple of things that I had consideration. I think for a long time it was, I don't, you know, obviously the most obvious is I just never wanted children, never desired the family life. You know, fun facts, I think it's like $1 million or anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million that you invest in someone for up to 18 to raise them. It's like, well, that sounds like a lot of money to travel or invest in a really sweet music studio. I don't know. So kind of like invest in my own endeavors. So, yeah. And I think... I also just realized like I am a lot of the burden on contraception falls on women. And it's, and especially reading about how fucked that like birth control is, you know, I'm going to butcher the study, but I remember reading about a study where initially men were offered something similar to, you know, hormonal birth control for women, but it was for a version for men. And in the study, like men were uncomfortable and got headaches.
Yeah.
And because of these like minor things, they're like, fuck this. We're going to put the push down to women who deal with a plethora of like fucked side effects.
Yeah.
And y'all deal with it.
Can confirm.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, that just seems so, that's so like petty and ridiculous that's what happened. That we just... That because there was slight discomfort for a man, that we just like push it off to women.
Yeah, yeah.
And that I just didn't feel okay with that. So I wanted to like offer, like, I still want to use, like, I have no problem using like contraception either way, but I didn't want to also put anyone else at risk, you know? It's also like if you have to get an abortion because of an unwanted pregnancy, that's also like, it's an emotional process. It's like a financial, you know, there's a lot around that. So I felt like this was the most ethical thing to do, that I didn't, I know what I didn't want to have, and I kind of wish I would have, I've wanted to do this for a while, but I didn't know, I think the cost of the numbers I've heard was like in the thousands. So I'm like, like that's a heavy investment. And, but now that I knew how like inexpensive it was here, I was like, oh shit. Well, had I known that, I would have like definitely gone a long time ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you finally got the opportunity to get it now, and that it like suits your beliefs and your needs, and it lets you have the kind of sex life that you want. You know, obviously you can still use protection with partners that you feel like that's a good calculation for. And then you have the freedom to like fluid bond with those. You like have a, you know, whatever your standards are for fluid bonding, obviously I'm not going to put words in your mouth, like then you have that added reassurance of it is so extremely unlikely that you could get somebody accidentally pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I hear so many misconceptions about vasectomies, and it's just so sad the way that it's stigmatized in our society, because I feel like it reduces men's options to take control of their own birth control, to like their own, you know, fertility is something that, like, just slapping on a condom shouldn't be the only option for them. And I know that, like, male pills are always kind of in the works, but nothing's really hit the market here yet in the U.S. Yeah. that's viable. There's low interest in it. And so vasectomies yeah. are definitely an option. And I feel like the misconceptions around them have to do a lot with our societal's, like, collective beliefs about masculinity. Mm. I often hear guys, like, making jokes about, like, oh, you'll be shooting blanks, or, like, good. It makes you, like, I mean, yeah, that's the point,
that's
right?
That's the point, yeah.
Or, like, that it reduces their masculinity somehow because they're no longer this virile, fertile, like, potential to impregnate anyone kind of person, right? Like, I'm so many men, like, get off about that. And I think there's potency there, pun intended, for that to be a sexy and kinky experience, certainly. But at the same time, I don't think people's quote unquote manhood or masculinity should be dependent on that either, right?
Yeah. I, for those who that matters, I feel that my manhood, if I'm going to really go down that path, has had zero impact on this whole procedure. Awesome. I still feel like a man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, I'm reeling my eyes even saying that, but that's like, because there is nothing that, it's not like, I hear even people say, like, oh, you cut off your balls. I'm like, well, actually, think about it. If you actually cut your balls off, that would be more advantageous because, A, no one could punch you there and drop you in a second. Secondly, you can fit into more clothes easier.
Hey, true.
Thirdly, it's like you'd be more, like, aerodynamic and flexible. So, like,
yeah.
You tell me, like, you tell me why I need to keep these sacks that are so vulnerable on my body. Because if I could cut them off and it would have no impact on my, you know, being, I'd fucking do it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Good point. Okay. So my final question for you then is, if you were to tell, if you had the ears of, like, everybody in the world, penis havers, those who have penises in the world, if you could reach them and tell them one thing that you wish they knew or understood about vasectomies, what would you say to them, whether it's logistical or philosophical?
I'll give you the ridiculous answer first, okay. and then I'll give you the real answer. So, assuming you're an only child, or even not, you get to say stuff like, "My bloodline ends with me," and you can say that with, like, a death stare into someone's eyes, like, "My bloodline ends with me."
Nice.
And then zoom in on their face, and then that's, like, that's pretty intense.
That's pretty badass.
Exactly. It's like something you would see, like, a Viking show or something.
I feel that, like, one. Damn. Yeah. Okay.
And then, so you get to say stuff like that, and I think that's somewhat empowering.
Totally.
But I think what I would want people to say is that to not be afraid of it. Like, I know that with any procedure, there's going to be complications, but you know what? When I think, if you're, like, very clear that you do not want children, and you've made that decision based on yourself, not mm-hmm. because your partner was wanting it for you or anything else, or your parents want you to have a children. Like, mm-hmm. make sure that you are making this as an informed choice. And this is just something I've just seen and grown up with. And I've only had one instance where I entertained the idea, but then realized quickly after that, this was my partner's idea, not mine.
Ah.
So I decided that, you know what, I'm going to, I just want to follow through this. So I would say, if you want to commit to it, do it, and don't let and just make sure you have, I don't know, make sure you have your aftercare for sure. Yeah. Have someone to help you for the next first week or two. But the thing I want everyone to know, that it's not as scary as you think. Like, yeah, like, your testosterone doesn't change. Mm. You don't lose your manhood over, like, all this nonsense.
You,
like,
still jizz just as much.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So certain cells are missing from it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, now it's, like, a little less risky in some behaviors, and mm-hmm. And so that's, like, what I'd say, this is the thing to take away. Just, it's going to be, it's a worthwhile investment. If you mm-hmm. something you consider, I'd say go for it, because it's you know, and also a lot of these medical places offer payment plans. So mm-hmm. even more, like, it's like paying off a car or something. You're just, and now you can spend more money in car if you want.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience about
no
this.
Problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a personal thing, and yet it's so relevant to, like, what we talk about here on the show and what our listeners are interested in. And I'm really glad that they get to hear it straight from you, like, your lived experience, not like, oh, statistics or textbook type education, but, like, here's a real person's, like, thoughts and feelings. And yeah, I just really appreciate you opening up about it and talking about it on the
anytime.
Show.
Yeah. Don't let the internet comments scare you.
Yeah.
Because some people can have had issues with it, but it's like, if you have a good doctor, which I imagine most doctors want to help you, like just if anything's feeling weird after like a week, usually that's a good time to make, all right, time to check in.
Yeah.
Don't just try to push through it and muscle. Like if your body's like this, something I'm in pain still, or this uncomfortable, let them help you and guide you. Don't like try to just like, oh, I'm going to man through this or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Because it's, you're not going to win.
Well, I'm really glad you're feeling better and that you're back to the show and everything. Thank you.
I'm glad to be back as well.
Sweet. Let's get into our questions.
Yeah. So our first letter comes from Luke at me.
That's clever.
It is clever. I'm just rolling my eyes.
Luke at me.
He's a 43-year-old straight man. And he writes, "Hey guys, my wife and I have an open relationship where she's my dom and has other submissives as well. While I love this arrangement, she does this thing sometimes that really upsets me, and I don't know if it's as big a deal as I feel it is. She's usually great at aftercare, except for really rough scenes when I need it the most. These scenes are still within my boundaries, but they can be really intense and painful. I'm left feeling kind of abandoned, which brings up all kinds of thoughts about her other subs, and I start assuming she takes better care of them and likes them more than me. Maybe she's bored with me. We've been together a long time, or maybe I'm just too needy. She seems to be done with the scene so quickly and wants to move on to other things, usually reading on her own, showering on her own, or watching her TV, or going to sleep. When I bring it up and complain, I somehow usually end up being the one comforting her. She'll say something like, I should really be taking care of you right now. I'm sorry. Even as she lays there, letting me cuddle her and stroke her hair. Or she'll also say, am I not a good enough dom for you? Do you resent me? I just have so many complex feelings going on within me that it takes a lot to take care of you, too. Sorry, I'm going to try that again. I just have so many complex feelings going on within me that it's a lot to take care of you too. I mean, of course I love being there for her and helping her feel better, but sometimes I need that TLC too, you know? I need the reassurance about our love and how it's important to her and how everything we just said and did was all just part of a scene. I mean, I know all this, but I just need to hear it. This all makes me hesitant to keep doing this with her. Like, maybe we need to reformat our whole marriage, if so, but I really don't want to do that. I don't want to find another dom outside this marriage, and I treasure what we've built together. She loves these experiences, too, since she usually initiates them and is really into it, but then she's so distant or an emotional mess afterwards. Is she manipulating me or just being dense?"
Thank you for writing about that, Luke. It sounds very like a vulnerable experience to even be able to talk to us about that, let alone what you're having leaves you very vulnerable, right? Like you've just had this intense scene and your dom like just disengages from you, it sounds like, and kind of does her own thing, leaves the room, like isn't giving you the aftercare you need. And aftercare, for those uninitiated, are a series of practices that are used usually after a BDSM scene that involved some level of physical or psychological distress, discomfort, pain, intensity. It doesn't even have to be negative feelings. It could just be an intense, like very realistic, very emotionally charged experience together. And so the aftercare can be like verbal and emotional things, like saying reassuring things, kind of bringing your tone and your persona back down to normal within the dynamic you have, or physical things like cuddling or having a snack or showering together, you know, soft blankets, all kinds of stuff that are soothing and comforting, just to kind of like reunite and like find that common ground with your partner again. So if she's not willing to do these things with you, because it sounds like she's got some emotional baggage that's getting in the way, like she's not willing or able to on some level, I think you got to put your foot down here. She knows it's something you want. Like it sounds like you've talked to her about this a few times, but she twists the conversation away.
Yeah.
Right? Like it makes it about her. And that I think is manipulative. Maybe not intentionally, but it's not serving you. And it's not serving your relationship either.
Yeah. It does sound like a textbook example of deflection, I think is the term. Deflection. Or so it's like you're asking about yourself, and then she makes it about herself, and then now you're comforting her. Mm-hmm. I think the part that's a little bit confusing is how she will do this, but accept specifically harder, like more intense scenes. So mm-hmm. it's like she's aware that that's there. And I think it's valid for her to be exhausted, but it does seem like there's maybe a gap of misunderstanding, or mm-hmm. like, I can't handle it, so I'm going to dip out. I need to take care of myself first.
Yeah. Because intense BDSM scenes can be exhausting for a dom too. Like, even though they're the one quote unquote in charge or doling out the experiences, doms need aftercare too. Like we've said on the show before. So like, she deserves this comforting stuff that she's getting, but it doesn't sound balanced. You're not getting your half of the needs met, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. how can we get Luke to bring it up in a way that can be heard? Because, like, my instinct is to make an ultimatum, personally.
Ooh.
Be like, look, I only want to engage with you in this kind of stuff if you can provide these needs being met for me. And if not, I don't feel safe doing it. I don't feel comfortable. Mm. It's not fulfilling to me without that.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't have to be, like, ultimatum. It could be, maybe it's, like, I like where your head's at, though.
You know, it's always there, I think.
Yeah. You know, what comes to mind is, like, asking, well, it sounds like, okay, if we're having these tens, like, should we be exploring these kind of intense scenes together if this is where we're met, where we're both needing something from each other and we can't give that? I think it calls for, like, a dialogue to figure out, what is her experience like? Does she understand what your experience is like, where you're, what it's like for you when you're just kind of left, you know, hanging and dripping with abandonment, you know? And also, I think it'd also be worth getting her more of her experience. It sounds like y'all touch it a little bit, but not enough to, like, get really deep into. It sounds like a, hey, I'm just struggling. I just need to take care of myself. And that's why she's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
But
and this, like, woe is me attitude too.
Yeah.
Like, you can have those feelings, lady, but, like, is now the time to ask for comfort around them? Like, can you set them aside, give comfort to your sub? And then when you guys are both, like, not in an emotionally charged sexual state, like, go out to coffee and just sit there and chat about, like, hey, let's, like, put everything on the table about our relationship here.
What an interesting coffee conversation to be at a coffee shop and be like, so, you know, when you're beating my ass red and calling me a little fucking cunt, then right. I want to make sure that I don't really mean that or whatever. I just imagine, like, hearing earshot, be like, what the fuck?
I would love to eavesdrop on that kind of coffee conversation.
And they're like, talk around, they love each other. I'm like, you know, I really understand. Yeah, I'm like when you call me a little bitch and you slap me across the face and when you make me bleed, it really, that's a really intense scene. And, well, I really enjoy that. And you're like, okay.
Holy shit. Yeah.
But it sounds like there's an agreement that we can create here in your initial conversation. Mm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like the contract of your relationship.
Yeah, I think that's the word I was looking for. When you're discussing it, I think it sounds like you need to have an outline. Okay, so in the situations that you're not being able to handle, which is the more rough ones, how do we handle this together? Because it sounds like both of you need something. So maybe that's like, does she need half an hour to herself right after? And then maybe there's an agreement like, okay, after half an hour, we're going to self-soothe for a little bit and maybe just have some things available ready for that.
Yeah.
And then after that, we can come together. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is like a intentional separation that needs to happen. But what's not clear is where she's coming from. So that's why I'm suggesting the dialogue of what's your experience like? Here's my experience.
Yeah.
Let's define the situation together. Mm-hmm. So that way, whenever it does happen, I'm not left feeling abandoned. And then you're not left feeling, maybe she's feeling overwhelmed with it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now I just did this. Now I have to, like, hold space for you.
Yeah.
So maybe we find a way that we can both meet together in the middle.
Yeah. Be sure to express how you want those needs met, like the specifics, words and actions you need done. And, you know, setting aside her other subs, if you need that addressed, maybe ask for certain phrases or reassurances from her regarding those. But I can see why you're extrapolating it to beyond the relationship, because there's some, like, deep emotional thing that you're not getting fulfilled in the moment. But yeah, I would state it as a need and be like, look, this needs to accompany this activity. Otherwise, it's like not tenable for me as it stands.
Yeah.
So I would try to make that really clear. Yeah. And good luck with that conversation, because if it works out, it sounds like it will really strengthen your relationship and make your bond even better.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have one quick air note to that. I know the example, I've used some language, and I would just want to call out that I'm using it in the context of someone liking more aggressive language when it comes to in a dom sub, which can be common. Some people like the dirty talk,
but it's a different context.
Exactly. Yeah. It's in a container. It's safer. Yeah. And so I just want to like own that and clear that up, because I don't want it to be like, well, I'm just dropping this like nothing. I'm using it in that context.
So, I was on the page with you. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
For those who may not be aware.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you for writing Luke.
All right. Our second letter comes from Alligator. Love it. You guys are so clever. 27-year-old bi woman. You like that one?
Huh? I do.
Cool. She writes, "Hi, Megan, Fernando. I need some hugs and guidance here. When I started dating my now ex, I'll call him Jim, I was so excited to introduce him to this one group of friends of mine. We met as housemates several years ago, and they've been my go-to for fun times, but also great emotional support. Over the years, the group grew a bit when original people got long-term partners. Jim was a great fit with them, and during our two-year relationship, we hung out a lot. I was happy to see him take initiative and hang out with some of them on his own eventually, too, without me being there. He's super extroverted and charismatic, more so than I am, so of course they all loved him. But once we broke up, another story, my friends kept inviting him to things, but not me. It wasn't obvious at first, but soon I noticed they rarely reached out to me or responded quickly or enthusiastically to my texts, so I stopped trying. But I'd find out he's still having a grand old time with them from pictures on social media and through the grapevine. Due to the nature of our breakup, I don't want to be around him at all anymore, so it's not an option for us to be at the same event, and I think my friend group knows that. I feel like I got silently kicked out of my own friend group, and they like him better. I'm so frustrated because I had such a history with them, so I feel really betrayed. Why did they do this? What can I even do about it? Sure, I have other friends, but this particular group really meant a lot to me, so it's not as simple as, quote, letting them go and just getting new friends."
Oh, man, Alligator. I think there are things you can do, mm-hmm. but I agree that while it's not as simple as letting them go and just getting new friends, like, it sounds like that would be the best option, mm-hmm. you know, to some degree, unless you can find some way to resolve some of this mm-hmm. weirdness with them.
Yeah.
But as far as things you can do, I think it is worth reaching out and having a conversation. Like, if these are people that value you and you have a connection with, then you can reach out and set up a time to meet up. Mm-hmm. I think individually would be best. Mm-hmm. So that way you can have a conversation, let it be a dialogue. Mm-hmm. Hey, I noticed when this happened, I wasn't getting invited, and I just want to know what's going on. And you could share, like, you know, when that happened, I felt really hurt that mm-hmm. you decided that. And my experience was like that you cared more about this person than me, and that, you know, this friendship that we had, it felt like people were responding to me less and almost siding with him mm-hmm. rather than being still connected with me. Mm-hmm. And it felt like I got pushed out without any consideration or conversation.
Yeah.
And so I really value our friendship and connection, and I want to like to clear that up so that maybe we can still have a connection here, or understand if we were at an impasse with mm-hmm. that. So
I like that you're using I statements, so you're not like using blame language at these people.
Yeah.
And like talking to them about your narrative, like here's my story of how I experience things, but it's not necessarily the end all be all story of this. Like, what's your experience? So kind of like coming from a curious standpoint, mm-hmm. asking them like, what did you experience? Like, is there a reason you guys aren't calling me and like, you know, hanging out with me? Like, and yeah, letting them know like the value and giving those positive affirmations of like how you miss them or like how you want to keep that connection, because it's important to you. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's really reasonable. And I know it can be scary to do, right? Like, imagine yourself sitting across the table from someone who you think has like estranged you, right? Like, that's kind of intimidating. You already feel rejected from the outset.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth pushing through that discomfort, because you might be able to salvage a friendship or multiple friendships here if you are able to talk about it with them.
Yeah. And you know what? There might be also a piece of the whole story that you may not be getting that mm-hmm. you would get now. Mm-hmm. So we don't know the context of the breakup, but if there is a possibility, depending on if there was a bad breakup with you two that you don't want to be in the same room, mm-hmm. then are there things that this person has said to your friend group as a means to estrange you from them?
Maybe.
And then that's why they have this idea of what happened mm-hmm. and they believe them, or maybe they're that person you know, it sounds like they were charismatic and very, you know, maybe convincing. Yeah. So, you know, and I don't want to assume that with everyone, but it's very possible.
Sure.
And then that way, whenever you reach out, they're like, I don't feel comfortable because they think you did this thing.
Yeah.
But when you have the conversation, and maybe they'll find, they'll say, hey, when you and Jim Gator, or Jim, how do you want to call him, broke up, you know, he said, this is what happened. And that felt really weird that you did that. And you're like, no, actually I didn't do that. So, we don't actually know what's going on with them. And so we want to just, you know, like the dialogue is going to be really helpful to clear that up. Mm-hmm. But that's not uncommon. Like, I think it's a really hard skill when you are friends with two different people to be able to still maintain the friendship. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we side with people. And sometimes it feels weird when we're like, we're holding space for both people for the same, you know, for like that same connection.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be super weird. It's just a matter of knowing that I can have a unique relationship with this person and I can have a unique person with this person. Mm-hmm. And that just because they didn't work out and maybe I don't agree with how they handle it in whatever ways, it doesn't, it's not a full a picture of their character or them as a person.
Right. Right.
But it's easy to color them as they're as like, oh, well, Jim did that. So, well, fuck Jim then, you know, like,
so. Yeah, that's a really good point. And then I would say, depending on how your friends share, like, how they respond to your questions and how you feel about their responses, then I think you can make some requests based on how that all went. So saying like, I'd love to start hanging out with you again. You're a really important person to me. Would you be interested in making this happen? How about like a weekly lunch or a phone date, a phone chat, something like that? Cause that way then you can make like, okay, now that we know these things about each other and each other's feelings, what's the path forward? What are the actions we want to take to either make this friendship happen and reignite it or peacefully go our separate ways if that's right. What they want. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the conversation needs to happen to get the information that you're asking us. And we're like, well, we know as much about it as you
that's
do.
That's true.
And, but I think being direct and making it like a request, you know, go meet him in the park. Like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Like, I'd like to, you know, catch up and, and then, yeah, like Mike said, it's like this, that'll give you enough to decide, do I continue going forward or have they, and can we repair this? Or if there's anything to repair, or do we realize that we're just not fit anymore and that this is for the best for everyone? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it'll hurt, but you know, there will be other people who won't be treating you this way or who will, you know, and then, you know, as hard as it is to create a new, you know, like special friend group, like it is possible. It's just, you know, sometimes when we are, if we ever separate from any communities, it can take time for us to like heal that before we want to go back into it. Cause you know, if a community just kind of feels like they abandoned you, then we're not exactly like, all right, well, let me just jump right into the next one.
Yeah. And, yeah. Man, well, thank you for writing, Alligator, and we hope you get your friends back and or get new and better friends. Yeah. Third letter comes from CLE, a 25-year-old straight woman. She writes, I've been interested in exploring Shibari, but since I'm single right now, I've been practicing self-tying and following instructional videos and diagrams. I'm excited to try this with a partner, and I really want to experience the feeling of being truly restrained. But every time I've tried a tie, it seems to slip right off. I have this beautiful, silky, pastel pink rope I got because it's so cute and might be more comfortable. I don't know. So is it something about the rope that's wrong, or am I doing something wrong in my ties? Got any recommendations?
Yeah, we certainly do.
We do.
gosh, that's like pretty awesome that you were self-practicing.
Yeah. Look at you exploring a new kink idea, not mediated by a partner. Like you can check it out yourself.
I feel like it would be worthwhile doing is like getting a mannequin and then tying up the mannequin.
I like that.
But you can't have the mannequin tie you up, obviously.
True. But it's a good way to practice the knots, I guess. Yeah.
You described this as a very silky rope. And while some of those ropes can feel really nice, I mean, correct me wrong, but I think most Shibari is the better ropes are not the ones that feel good.
well, it's got to feel like a certain way. I mean, so it sounds, if you're saying it's shiny and it keeps slipping out of knots, and you're like following diagrams and instructional videos, and I assume you're doing it right and safely. Unfortunately, I don't have any pictures of what you're tying here, but My guess is that you're using nylon rope. And if you bought it because it's just cute and shiny, like, and maybe you just weren't aware. So check like your receipts or any labels that came with this rope and check if it's nylon. Because if it is, I would say nylon's too slippery. You either want cotton or jute. So I would get different rope, honestly, and not use that nylon one anymore. Nylon is also too dangerous for shibari. And here's why. So, when rope can slip, like you're describing, it can tighten up or move onto risky areas of your body and inadvertently cause like nerve damage or circulation issues. So that's why it's dangerous. You want to tie a knot and know that the knot is going to stay where it's at and stay at its tension level. That's really crucial, because otherwise, if, when you're adding knots and different knots and it starts to get complicated and some start to tighten, it could really alter the whole experience in negative ways, right?
Yeah. And isn't nylon what climbers use for their rope?
I'm not sure, but I think so.
I feel like it seems like it is, or or like suspension stuff. Like so silk is also just not, it's way too slippery. I forget if it has the same properties as nylon, but ultimately, if especially when you're self-practicing, which there is an inherent risk, like you want to make sure you have a tool to cut yourself out. And if you get yourself in a knot that you can't get out, it's going to be a bit difficult to like cut it unless you have like, I don't know, like a sharp object just
nearby
mounted on the wall, ready for you to cut yourself open, which sounds risky already. And so
see if you can do this supervised, perhaps, you know, like find yourself a shibari club locally and you can do all these things like clothed in a non-sexual context for practice or instruction. So that might be a good place to start practicing.
Just like, it sounds like also as much as you want to get into the heavier stuff, start simple, start with the basics, especially that you're doing it with yourself. There's a book called The Knot from the Knotty Boys, spelled with a K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Nice.
Very clever. and that gives you a lot of good like basic rope stuff and can talk about a lot of safety practice as well. But like Meg said, like, finding local dungeon, making friends or having, maybe finding some girlfriends or something, have a knot tying party or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's also a YouTube channel I've seen recommended called Twisted Monk. And so I would lean on those resources. So not just to like how to tie the specific knots, but how to do it in ways that, like show you the overarching picture on how to do this safely and more effectively. We don't want this slipping on you in any dangerous ways. So I applaud you for your approach on it, and I hope you find a better rope. There's also like local rope sellers in many, places. So you can kind of either look online in terms of like local sales. I don't know if people would advertise this on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, but maybe there, or Etsy stores. You can like support small time shibari rope peddlers, which is pretty cool. And you can ask them questions about it and like find the rope that's right for you.
Yeah. And I think lastly, make sure you're, if you're buying rope, it's best to buy new rope and not used rope.
Yes.
Because with used rope, it's a risk. You don't know the strength. You don't know anything about the properties, and you're going by where it would be like with anything, like even climbing. Like you wouldn't just go buy a bunch of like used rope.
Right.
Unless you're practicing for very short like distances or like low heights. But rather like get something that brand new, so at least you have some comfort in knowing that that manufacturing is like a very low possibility of causing any issues.
Great tips. Well, have fun, and we hope you find yourself in a solid bind.
Hey,
you're welcome. You're welcome. Oh, and we want to let you guys know that the bonus episode for our patrons on Patreon for April is published now. So if you want to hear about what's on that episode, go to patreon.com/headoverfeelspod. And here's what you're missing out on if you're not subscribed on Patreon. That episode is going to talk about what to do when your boyfriend wants to jack off in front of you.
What a title.
How to suss out fake doms and how to deal with a hot and cold ex. So we have some juicy and fascinating things in that episode. So head on over to Patreon, find us, Head Over Feels Podcast, and subscribe. Starts at just $5 a month. And there's other options that go up from there to get more awesome stuff from us every month.
Our spotlight today is about emotional intelligence.
So what is emotional intelligence? Let's throw out some definitions just to set the baseline.
Set the mood.
Yes. Set the mood. Yes. So emotional intelligence is the capacity to be aware of, control, and express one's emotions, and to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically. So it's got like two components, the self-aware and the awareness of others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is we tend to be drawn to people who have a higher EQ, not to be misconstrued with equalizer, but emotional intelligence. Uh-huh. I guess it'd be just EI. Uh-oh. But why is it important to have emotional intelligence, period? Mm-hmm. So I think first off, this will benefit your interpersonal relationships because you'll be able to like identify your own feelings and then identify others. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a way of picking up social cues way, but this is like a more subtle and maybe deeper subtext than just, oh, like they're scratching their shoulder while they're talking to me. They might be in disinterest.
Right. Like, you know, like criminal body language reading or whatever. Yeah. Not like that level.
Yeah. But it's more like if you can pick up on how you're maybe presenting yourself and maybe how that might be making someone else uncomfortable, then maybe you can like, oh, I can adjust or have some awareness. Maybe you need, maybe you're not fully aware of like how you're, I don't know. It's like our moods can be, or emotions can be really contagious. True. I think they have there's like emotional contagion as a term.
Ooh, yes.
So, you know, it's like when someone is feeling something, then you can feel really intense. And, you know, a common thing in cults, hey, fun cult 101 is that, because that's relevant here, is that you can, that sometimes they'll have exercises where you'll have everyone crying about something. And then, but it's easy to like cry because everyone else is doing it. And so there's like the emotional contagion as a real life example.
That is a good example.
I hope no one here has to go through cult like
totally. But yeah, so it's important, like that self-awareness. So like you can see the context through which you move in the world and how you're received by others, but then also reading others and like understanding why they may be feeling what they're feeling. It's especially useful in situations where, let's say somebody you care about is really sad or angry about something. And that something isn't something that makes you sad or angry. So you're looking at them confused, like, why are you upset about this? Right. So with some practiced emotional intelligence tools and awareness, you can learn to get curious about their experience and really get it, why they're upset about the thing, and that it's okay that they're upset about things that don't make you upset and vice versa. Yeah. So kind of like seeing how different we all are. Right. And how our reactions are very unique to our own personal histories, experiences, personalities, stuff like that. Yeah.
Empathy.
Yes, it's like
empathy.
That's exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's also an impact on your mental health too. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're not aware of your emotions, then you're easy to fly off the handle. Like this is the trope of like the male who like just flips off the table and like yells and just goes from 0 to 60, you know, in like one interaction, you know, or just like mood swinging, maybe to really depressed or anxious. Mm-hmm. If you're not sure, it's somewhat like that thing in the basement, you know, like if you're not aware of what's in the basement, it's easy to be scared of it or what's in the dark. Uh-huh. So if you're aware, have awareness of it, then it's easier to like navigate it more. So if I know that I'm angry, then instead of letting my anger just drive all my interactions or how I act towards people, I now know, like, okay, I need to, I'm feeling really angry. I need to like maybe cool off for a little bit and go outside or something. It might be, you know, for something like depression or anxiety, it's like, oh, maybe I'm needing something right now. So it helps you, like, it's like that self-awareness is going to play into all these different ways in your life. And without that awareness, you're just like this, I don't know, you're just like this brute that's just going around and pushing your emotions and making everyone feel what you feel. And it's a bit, it's like irresponsible in a
sense. Right. It's like willful ignorance about your own impact on others. And that's a great point. So emotional intelligence is a huge topic, and we're not going to try to cover all of it, obviously, in this quick spotlight topic, but I'm trying to bring it to your awareness so that if this isn't something you've thought of recently or that you think of very often or that you've never approached with intentionality in your life, hey, now's a good time to start, right?
Yeah.
There are books on this, which we'll go over in some toolbox segments in the future. Mm-hmm. We'll cover more aspects of this. But I wanted to leave you guys with like one takeaway exercise you can do around emotional intelligence. So let's give them like what's one really good 101 emotional intelligence starter point exercise. Kind of like exercise that muscle, start sharpening that tool.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest one for most people is like, it will be just like, it's a self-awareness exercise. Because a lot of people, just their awareness around their emotions is like, it's non-existent.
True.
And so it's a simple journal exercise. Mm-hmm. So like whenever you are experiencing an emotion, or you're feeling something, whether it's in the moment or you want to reflect on a past emotion, mm-hmm. or maybe you're aware that there's a certain event or interaction that triggers that emotion, mm-hmm. have a journal handy and just write down like, what are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And start and then describe the thing that you're feeling.
Yeah.
A bonus tip here too is to actually read about different emotions.
Ooh.
The reason being is that when you start expanding your vocabulary, then anger isn't enough. Mm-hmm. Then it's because anger is such an umbrella.
Yeah.
You could feel agitated. You can feel frustrated. And so by increasing your vocabulary, you start getting into the more nuance of emotions, because emotions aren't like, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry.
Right.
You know, it's like we live in a much broader spectrum of it. So find out the more nuanced version, or maybe describe it and then see if you can find a word that like encapsulates it.
Yeah.
And that way, when you understand what it is, mm-hmm. then that awareness starts helping you understand it in other people, mm-hmm. and for you, how to you to manage it. So if you know that I get frustrated when these certain things happen, okay, so then maybe we start looking at what's the frustrating thing here.
Yeah.
Or if I know I'm agitated, you know, or angry, maybe I'm just, whatever the case is, you're able to like kind of like zero in on, you know, the issue. Mm-hmm. Like think of it like this way. If you said my arm hurts, well, there's a lot of fucking arm to like consider.
Right.
So let's say like maybe it's my wrist that's specifically hurting. Cause mm-hmm. if you're going to a doctor, you say my arm hurts, they're going to ask where on your arm. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of pain is it?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. It's a dull pain. It's a really sharp pain. It's mm-hmm. on my elbow. It's in the inside of my elbow. That, and, cause that's more helpful mm-hmm. than saying my arm. It's like, okay, which part of your arm? My whole thing. Really? The whole thing.
Really?
Yeah. It just hurts. Okay. It just feels like hurting. Okay. So that, do you see, once you hear the difference, you realize how important, you know, how this relates to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So like that self-awareness is the great first step. And I like the expanding your vocabulary mm-hmm. angle. So a way that people can do that is by looking at a feelings wheel or an emotions wheel.
Oh, yes.
This is a really easy thing you can Google, and you'll find many versions of basically the same thing. But it kind of categorizes feelings words and gets more and more specific and nuanced. And often, you know, anger, for example, is such a common emotion, and yet it's almost always a mask for something else. So like you got to do some digging. So the best place to start is within yourself, like some self-examination. What's below this anger? Is it betrayal? Yeah. Is it loneliness? Is it fear of loss? Like it could be so many things. Yes. So identifying and using those words about your emotions. Great. That's just like laying the baseline. And then another level of this exercise, I would say, is ask yourself where, and journal this, where are the emotions coming from? Like, why are you having this? I am angry because, and dig within your personality, your history, or your set of values. Like if you value loyalty and trustworthiness and you feel betrayed by someone, I'm feeling this strong emotion because I have this strong value that it conflicts with, or like reality conflicted with the value, or the outcome wasn't what I wanted it to be. So you'll learn more about yourself and what your values even are if you try to find the source, the origin for your emotions. So then you're creating a story. I'm feeling this because this.
Yeah.
And you can start trying to create stories about others when you're trying to understand them. Maybe they're feeling X because they believe Y. And, you know, verify. Don't just like make a narrative about them and then assume truth. But this could be a good way where you start hypothesizing about why people are feeling what they're feeling, and you're growing that empathy muscle.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. I like that. And you could even print it on yourself. And then whenever you're having an exchange, you could be like, hold on, let me consult my wheel of emotions. And they're like, what?
Dude, that's great. That's funny.
Yeah.
But pull that out in a fight with your partner.
Yeah. And then like, look at it. It's like, okay, angry. What's under the angry category? Yeah.
I like it. I envision like a giant feelings wheel someday. I've seen more simple ones, but oh, spin it.
What am I feeling right now? I'm pissed.
Pissed and spin again, horny. Fun combo. Well, we hope we introduced the topic of emotional intelligence sufficiently to get you start thinking about it, start looking into it. We'll touch back in on it another time, but good luck and enjoy that exercise. Yeah. We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.